Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Let's Get Real on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and I am back live. I know there were a few weeks there with no live show this summer, but that time has come to an end, and I'm back in for an all-new season of all-new, all-live Let's Get Real, starting with tonight. And, of course, next week, don't forget to tune in to my anniversary show, my one-year anniversary show, which will be very exciting. But tonight, I'm actually doing things a little bit differently. Tonight I actually have a guest in the studio, and you know, I don't usually have the guests on the show. I like to kind of be alone in here in my own little kind of crazy private domain, spinning out all my theories and conspiracies about foodiness. But I decided tonight to start the new season off with a guest, and my guest is my coworker and friend Chad Pagano, Chef Chad Pagano. So welcome to the show, Chad.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. And if you listened to my previous show, which was called Why We Cook, Chad has been on that show. He had been on the show once before. We did a show about eggs. But that was then, and this is now, and this is Let's Get Real. And so, as we all know, Let's Get Real is about foodiness, and we've talked a lot about what foodiness is, and that's what I've been talking about in the last year, foodiness being the rise of all the fake food products that are masquerading as real food, like soy crisps and veggie puffs and vitamin water and protein bars and peanut butter with added omega-3 and all of that, and how that's all replaced real food in our lives, and how it's, I think, also caused all sorts of correlated problems with replacement of the fake with the real in our lives, leading us to people over-consuming all that is fake in our lives and leading us to become a nation of obese people riding motorized scooters and only having Facebook friends and not real friends, and enjoying people like the Kardashians. That's basically what I've been talking about on the show for years. But what I started thinking about when I was talking to Chad about coming on the show is that foodiness itself, which is all this manufactured food doppelganger stuff, foodiness itself is actually a byproduct or a sort of result of war itself. And now the idea of having you on the show came out of when we were talking about MREs, right? You remember?
Right. I do remember.
We had a student who was a vet, and he brought in an MRE, which is it stands for Meals Ready to Eat.
Meal Ready to Eat.
Ready to Eat.
We all had a great laugh.
We had a great
laugh. Disgusting.
We looked at the ingredients on the package and realized how utterly disgusting and horrible and full of chemicals this stuff was that we were feeding to our soldiers.
Right. Well, that opened up the door for the research into the space program, and we know where that ended.
Right. We started talking about the space program, and then, of course, conversations about life in space ultimately lead to, well, where do you go to the bathroom? And then, of course, we had to go onto Google and look up all these pictures. But anyway, but I really started to think, because then I decided that you should come on the show and we should talk about MREs, but then I really started thinking about war and warfare and soldiers, and that foodiness is actually this byproduct of war. And really, it came out of World War II. After World War II, we had developed all this chemical weapons technology. And after the war, there was this massive surplus of chemical weaponry, but also there was all this technology that had come out of the war, and the government needed a use for all of this stuff. And so they actually started using it for agriculture and turned it into pesticides and fertilizer. And that's where all this chemical fertilizer came from. It was bomb making stuff left over from the war. And because of that, farmers were then able to produce these massive commodity food crops, things like corn and soybeans, and which ultimately led us to corn syrup and all of the sugar and all the processed food, which turned into foodiness. So you could say the foodiness is completely a direct effect of war. And we are the casualties, basically, of that war. And then I started thinking about how now we kind of turned it around and we ship the foodiness back to the soldiers who are out in the field. Because when you and I were looking at the ingredients in that MRE, we realized that that's what it was.
Right.
It was all chemicals. So foodiness is a byproduct of war. And then we take all of this stuff that is manufactured and we ship it back over and we feed it to our GIs. So that's creating a problem, I think, because I don't think we're necessarily feeding our soldiers very well. But because I don't have firsthand, my experience of what soldiers eat comes from watching MASH.
Well, I don't know where to go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not far off in certain settings, but the military is so varied these days, you know?
Right. And so, that's what I was thinking is that, you know, there's sort of the bases, the big bases with the big kitchens, and it's all organized and they're cooking and feeding people, right. And then there are people out in the field.
I was stationed at West Point and I had some of the best meals of my life there,
right.
You know, because they have a real chef on
right staff, and it's real and food. It's real different food. Right. So I think it's so complicated and complex and diverse. But then I was thinking about, you know, we've talked about this before, that, you know, because of foodiness, now we have this utterly obese population. You and I were discussing this when we were driving out here today. We were only driving because of complications. Normally, we would take the subway like, you know, good citizens. Just get that out there. But, you know, we have this massively obese population, which is something I'm going to talk about a lot next week, by the way, on the anniversary show. But that's actually making it hard for the military to get recruits,
right?
Because these guys are so big and heavy and so out of shape that they can't pass the physical fitness test. So it was sort of interesting how, you know, World War II gave us the freedom to produce these massive quantities of food, which ultimately led us to producing too many freedom fries, really, which has now made us all too fat to fight. And what I talk about on the show a lot is what I call the foodiness rabbit hole, where you go so far deep down into the land of the fake that you can't see your way back out to the land of the real. And I think this is really a foodiness rabbit hole, what I'm calling a foodiness foxhole. During World War II, that when they were recruiting guys and guys were being drafted, they actually found that they were all underweight. They were having trouble finding guys who weren't underweight because we were coming off of the Depression. And people would join the Army as a way to guarantee that they'd be fed three times a day. And now, you know,
it costs more to feed your family back then, right, than it does today.
I guess so. Well, because of, right, the commodity agriculture.
We're not eating real food now.
Right, we're not eating real food.
And people respected the food.
Right.
And people, you know, portioned it properly, and they ate the right amount.
Right.
You know, now we could buy chicken for pennies.
Yeah.
And if we don't eat it, who cares? Throw it in the garbage.
Right. And that was coming off the Depression where food was so scarce and it was so precious and you didn't waste anything and you didn't throw anything out. So I feel like there's a war going on between food and foodiness, and foodiness is totally winning. Foodiness is beating the crap out of food, and it's going into food and replacing it with a doppelganger, like in The Matrix, which I love to talk about. But on the other hand, I think that going to war also has had some collateral benefits for the U.S., which is that, like, now we have great Vietnamese food here. Because we went to Vietnam and we, you know, bombed the shit out of them. And then we allowed all these Vietnamese refugees to come to the U.S. And now, see, they're having the last laugh because now they're all getting rich selling us pho.
There you go.
So there you go. Anyway, that's just my little...
And I thought we lost that war. So.
Well, it was never really a war to begin with, right?
Right, a police action.
It was a police action.
Correct.
And then Korea was a conflict, right? And before World War II, American food was really bland and homogeneous and boring. And then all the GIs came back from World War II, from Europe and from Asia, and they brought back all these tastes for really interesting food. So war does serve some purpose when it comes to food. But anyway, we're not really here to talk about all of that tonight. That's just my introduction. What we do want to talk about is your experience with food in the military and what that was like for you and what you wound up eating. And, you know, I have all these questions for you. So first of all, why don't you give us a little background on how you wound up in the military and what your experience was, how long you were there, all of that.
Well, I was failing out of college. I was disillusioned. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So instead of going home and confronting my mother, I ran off and joined the infantry and called her from basic training, and she, I remember her quote was, you're going to die in a war, dumbass.
Nice.
Yeah,
it was supportive.
I told her to get out of Vietnam, there's no wars, everything's fine, and my first leave got recalled, and we invaded Panama to get rid of Noriega, 1989.
Right. Well, do you remember growing up, people said to us that we would be the first generation to have no war in our lives.
That's why I joined, truthfully. Yeah, I could sit here and act like I don't know if you told me I was going to war if I would have done it, truthfully.
Yeah, I remember them saying, you will be the first generation to know no war.
Right.
And the ROTC guys would come to school.
And I did four years and fought in two of them. So.
Yeah, so there you go. Okay, so you ran off.
So I ran off, joined the military, and that was it. Ended up in infantry training, and I was looking for an adventure. I didn't want to, be trained in any careers. I grew up around rifles and hunting and being in the woods, so the infantry seemed natural. From there, I ended up, in a scout platoon as a sniper, and the rest is history.
And you went to Saudi Arabia?
Saudi Arabia.
Right. And how long were you there?
8 months.
In combat?
No, the combat wasn't that long. We basically sat around. Combat was 20 days.
I'm glad to know my tax dollars went to you sitting around.
Yeah, eating.
Eating.
Right.
Yeah.
And drinking.
Nice.
Right.
You were allowed to drink even though you're in a country that they had alcohol for you guys.
We got our hands on it. We got our hands on it. We weren't supposed to, but it's always there. Not a lot, but...
It's there if you want it.
It's there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so I remember you telling me a story about when you were in Panama.
Right.
Okay, so can you kind of start from the beginning? So you run away, you join the Army.
Join the Army.
Where did they send you?
So, I was in the 10th Mountain Division. We were one of the most highly deployed units in the world. We went everywhere. Panama, our realm of responsibility was really Central America. So we were trained to fight in the jungles and, aid the Contras and all that stuff. Yeah.
The Reagan.
Right.
Legacy.
We were in Honduras and I spent a year in Honduras. Panama, we did a lot of training. Even before the invasion, we were there. Our jungle operation training center is in Panama, Fort Sherman, I believe. Mm-hmm.
And that's where you did that thing with
and
the
that's
chicken.
Where, yeah, it was a jungle, basically a survival course, I guess. We were trained in some survival techniques, and they starved us for, the way I remember it was a week, but it was probably a day or something.
They you told me 3 days they didn't
yeah,
let
maybe
you
it was something like that. Yeah. It was somewhere between a week and a day. Uh-huh. I was hungry, put it that way.
I get hungry after 3 hours.
And they had a specialized instructor who taught us how to harvest roots and what was edible, what wasn't. But they had brought in chickens, and they freed the chickens. Live chickens, and they were running around, and we had to capture a chicken, kill it, and then eat it. So I finally got one. I grabbed it, and they had trained us, instead of cutting its head off, where you sever the nerves, apparently, and the chicken continues to run around, the better way to do it is to just rip the head off the chicken. So my buddy was standing next to me, and I just assumed it would take a lot of force to pull a creature's head off. And I put all my muscle into it, and I ended up stabbing my partner in the face with the beak of the chicken, which apparently is a big deal with the infections and bacteria. And then we learned how to blow into the carcass of the chicken that separated the skin from the body, uh-huh. from the meat.
That's like how you make Peking duck.
Right, and nothing goes to waste. So, then we could start cooking the main chicken body, but we would sit there and pluck off the feathers and then eventually get the skin into this, chicken stew, quote unquote.
Wow.
And it was the most delicious chicken I ever had.
Of course, because you were
so
hungry.
My mouth's watering as I talk about it.
Well,
because I was starving.
And it was probably a, free range.
I'm sure it was.
It wasn't like shipped in from Purdue, right? It was
sure
some like local Honduran
American
farmers.
American government overpaid. Some
right.
Panamanian.
It was like the gold toilet seat
right.
of chickens.
Right.
Right. Somebody got.
But it was delicious.
But what did they feed you outside, like when they actually gave you food and didn't make you
fend
for yourselves?
Yeah, so that's a huge question. So it would depend on where we were. Most of the time we were deployed overseas. So we could be in a what effectively would be our base, our combat base. Not necessarily in combat, maybe we're doing training. But we'd have barracks. We called them hooches, crude wood structures. Mm-hmm. And in that case, there would be a mess hall. And truthfully, it really varied from location to location. The more remote location, you knew you were going to eat MREs.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, or, prepackaged food that came in, was boiled, and then served to us.
Right.
But in the bigger bases, the food, truthfully, was excellent.
Yeah.
A lot of the places.
Yeah, I've read articles about feeding the military, like on the scale of, an aircraft carrier or something, or on what they do and what they bring in. I mean, it sounds like things are really high quality, and I guess it really all depends on your location.
Right. I mean, our main base, Fort Drum, New York, they had a state-of-the-art facility.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had everything from short-order hamburgers to, you know, pizza and, yeah. and then, you know, entrees, dishes, you know, to include lobster and steak.
Really?
Grill.
So more of my tax dollars going.
Yeah. Yeah. They fed us really well for, you know, I mean, I was unmarried. I was not married. So, you know, the government they just paid for my food. Some of the married guys I knew in the military got an allowance, but to eat at the chow hall, even for them, was like $1.29. Mm. You get a, you know, steak dinner. I mean, a ribeye. Nice.
What do you mean they paid an allowance like for their spouse or?
Yeah, I guess it was a family allowance for food because a lot of them lived off base.
Oh, okay.
But if we were on base during the day, they would go to the chow hall and pay $1.30 to eat a, wow. you know, a lunch.
Well, you know the famous Napoleon quote, right, about armies, that an army travels on its stomach, right? So you have to feed your guys well. But if you're just sitting around for months and months on some base.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to criticize here.
No, we never did. And, well, even along with that, too, I don't think, you know, the whole thing, you know, we worked hard, even on the base. I mean, you were up early.
You were training.
You were training. You were physical training, you know, at the range. I mean, even a...
So you weren't just sitting around getting fat.
No. A down day as an infantryman, mm-hmm. you're burning thousands of calories. Mm-hmm. So they fed us pretty well.
So they keep you really well fed.
Yeah, they were concerned.
And then once you were deployed and when you were overseas, how did that work? Like when you were in Saudi Arabia, did they feed... I mean... Is the food's not sourced there? It's all brought in, right?
No, it's all shipped in
you
on
wanted,
pallets.
Yeah.
They you know, they have portable field kitchens, basically. Mm-hmm. They would set up behind the lines. Mm-hmm. And they would generally, depending on the tactical situation, you know, you could end up going there three times a day. As an infantryman, you were lucky if you got in there once a day. And lucky, I don't know if it's the right word. The food was pretty bad most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, bulk stews...
That was like pre-made, and they would
pre-made. They would heat it over steam baths and serve it out.
And so when you were in Honduras, Panama, and Saudi Arabia, right?
Right, Germany.
And Germany. So when you had time off, did you go out into the life of those countries and eat? I mean, did people mostly that? Because I know that
Saudi
like
Arabia, no, we weren't allowed to
You weren't allowed.
Yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. Honduras, Panama, yes. Germany, yes.
Yeah, well, sure, in Germany.
And it was amazing. You know, we were eating garbage in Honduras, you know, at our base, which was pretty remote. We had three or four what they called remote outposts that we had various missions at. And the food was terrible. But every once in a while, when we go out on patrols, we'd end up in the villages and stuff, and you'd be... in someone's house or, you know, at a small cafe in Honduras. And the food was incredible. Mm. Grilled chicken, sauces. I mean,
yeah.
I love the Honduran food. A lot of, a lot of fresh proteins, you know, from you see them running around in the
freshly
street.
Freshly killed.
Yeah, freshly killed. It was great.
Yeah.
Panama, you know, when we were there in training, we were on the base. So again, it was, you know, depending, you know, good to mediocre, but the funny thing I remember about the invasion of Panama was being in Panama City proper and securing a street that had a McDonald's on it. And I remember the guy, one of the guys in my squad said, we should go in that McDonald's and get food. And he did. He jumped up, ran across the street, and there was an armed guard, Panamanian guard, mm-hmm. with a, you know, M16 or something, let him in. And I don't know if you remember them at the time. They had a thing called the...
McLean?
No, it was...
the McRib.
No.
The McDLT?
It was something where they kept all the lettuce and
tomatoes.
Keeps
the hot food hot and the cold food cold. The McDLT.
So he got like six of those, and he came running back. And I got to tell you, it didn't taste like McDonald's to me. It was different.
Because of where you were and the stress you were under?
Yeah. It might have been a real hamburger, for all I know. You know, to give the Panamanians some credit. I don't really remember. I just remember not liking it because I couldn't identify it as McDonald's.
Oh, that's interesting.
I was disappointed in it. For whatever. I can't remember if it was. It was fine. I ate it.
Huh. Well, but I remember that McDLT actually was a big flop.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think probably for that reason, I think it probably tasted like too fresh or
something. Yeah, it was like a real hamburger meal.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, wow, I had one shot at McDonald's in a combat zone and it sucked.
But there are McDonald's on bases. That's one of the things that I find really disturbing is that we're sending these people abroad to, you know, put them in these dangerous situations. And I guess, of course, me being who I am, I see that as a bad thing, that we're putting McDonald's and fast food and all this American garbage on the bases.
It is.
Where these people should be fed really well and be really, you know, it's like during the Olympics, McDonald's was the big sponsor. Right. And like the athletes are feeding that to them. I mean,
big business. It's just the, you know, it's a reflection of our society on the military bases. And the government doesn't care about you or I sitting here, in my humble opinion. And they don't they care even less about those soldiers.
Yeah.
So if they could work
they're just
out
bodies to be fed.
A deal. Yeah. And if they could keep, you know, some kid from Middle America or from anywhere smiling with a McDonald's
fed.
The health ramifications of it, they could care less.
No,
it's
of course.
4 years. And they churn that kid out. And
4 years,
it.
Fill him up with the cheapest calories possible.
Right.
And then kick him
out.
He's
not going to hurt himself in 4 years.
Right.
Well,
and it's, you know, we used to talk about the military industrial complex in school and, you know, about how, you know, that's what, you know, took us out of the Depression was the lead up to World War II and all that. And I think that's a big part of it now, too, is that the government has contracts with all the, you know, massive food corporations. And it's probably.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, find anything on, you know, at the time, Fort Drum, where I was stationed. In Watertown, New York, was one of the most modern military bases in the world. And, you know, it was effectively its own little city.
Yeah.
You would never really have to leave the base. And they had everything from, you know, an Applebee's, the way I remember, I mean, and when you talk about fast food, not just McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Roy Rogers, all these Midwest stuff I didn't even know existed.
Those weird chains you've never seen because you're from Long Island.
Right, Hardee's and other things that left my neighborhood. Sonic. It was everywhere. And, you know, and guys would eat it, I'm not kidding, every night.
Everything,
I'm not going to the chow hall. I'm going to McDonald's.
Right, because it was familiar and comforting and safe and predictable.
Right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They wouldn't try anything new.
Right. Wow. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, the military, you know, they claim it's all about just keeping the soldier smiling. They don't care if they could give you a little bit of joy, if it's good, bad for you. You know, even out in the field, if we were at Fort Drum training, we'd go out for weeks at a time, maybe, you know, a 2 week, we called it a deployment, but we basically walked out of our barracks and walked into the woods in the training area. And we'd eat MREs for 5-6 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would always set up a hot meal for us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just it being a hot meal, and it might be like, you know, those processed hamburger patties that they'd steamed
pink
warm,
slime.
But there were buns and
they were
some
hot.
Lettuce and tomatoes, corn on the cob.
Right. And after an MRE, it was like the best food.
It was gourmet.
It was like banquet, yeah.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, more with chef and former, what were you? Specialist E4?
Yes.
Chad Pagano.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Remember that you can find Let's Get Real on Facebook at Let's Get Real. Find me there. You can become a fan of the show. You can send me a message. Say hello. I would love to hear from you. You can also follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. follow me on Twitter or send me tweets, retweet things, however it works. I don't know. Twitter to me is like somewhat of a mystery still, but I'm getting there. Also remember that all Heritage Radio Network shows are on iTunes and they're all free. So there are probably thousands of them now. I know I have like 140 episodes and there are thousands of them. So you can listen to everything we've ever done now on iTunes. You can also always listen to anything that's on heritageradionetwork.org, and there's a live stream on there too, and we have a lot of new shows coming up and big things are happening, and you know that Heritage Radio is now member supported, so you should go to our website and click on join or become a member, whatever it says, and you should join because you get the thrill and the satisfaction of knowing that you're supporting something great and that you also get a little special card and it gives you discounts at places, and that's always really nice too. Because you know me, I'm super thrifty. I love the discount. Anyway, also, next week is my big one-year anniversary special show. And also, this coming Saturday night, I will be live on BBC Radio 5 on a show called Up All Night from 8:30 to 9:30. And I'm pretty excited about that. So if you're around, you can listen to that. It's streamed live online, of course, so you can listen to that. Okay, anyway, we're back with my friend and coworker, Chef Chad Pagano, who was in the first Gulf War. And then how did you make the transition from being a sniper in Saudi Arabia to becoming a pastry chef? Because I think that's a really interesting change of events there.
Yeah, I kind of fell into it. I got out. I was praying that I wouldn't die. And I promised not to rob, steal, or cheat anymore, and I made a list, and you need a job if you're not going to do those things.
Yeah, I guess so, right.
I made a list of things I love to do, drink, you know, video gaming, and food. I wrote the word food, and I thought chef, and pastry was the furthest thing from my mind. Ended up working in a small pastry shop, and I just fell in love with it. I was amazed, you know, I was with these grungy bakers in the morning, and then the fancy pastry chef came in the afternoon. And, you know, four or five basic ingredients can make all these different products. Mm-hmm. And ended up going to culinary school. The rest is history. I like the artistic aspects of pastry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, always considered myself a bit of an artist. So mm-hmm. I kind of just fell into it.
Well, that's what I think is really interesting about you is that you're this very kind of traditional kind of guy.
Thank you.
You hunt.
I do.
You're into sports. You're a guy, you know? You're a guy's guy.
Let's go Giants.
Whatever. I don't even know what that means. But yet you are very good at things like pulling sugar into flowers and piping tiny little designs on pettifours. And you're totally comfortable with that.
I am.
You embrace that side of yourself. I really like about you. And
as a libertarian, you know, I always say that's why we live in America.
So you have the freedom to do both.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, my military background and the fact that I pull sugar and make flowers, you know, kind of cross each other a little bit and give me a little, mm-hmm. you know, like if someone's trying to make fun of me for being a pastry chef, a lot of my meathead friends do.
Mm-hmm. A lot of my culinary coworker chefs do.
Right. And I say,
the bone burners.
Really? You were a sniper or, you know, or you served in war. And
right.
So, you know, I get to say that.
Exactly. Exactly. You can sort of pull that out. That's like your secret weapon.
Right.
Okay. Now, we're running out of time, but I want to get back a little bit more to your food experience in the military. Talk a little bit about the MREs, what was in them. I mean, were they really, like, historically bad? The one we looked at, I think we weren't sure if it was a real one.
I don't think it was.
More like a camping kind of
mountaineering
thing. Mountaineering.
Kind of thing.
When you were in, did they have those self-heating elements in them?
No, actually.
Because they have that now, right?
A lot of them do. I think a few of them towards the end, when I was getting out, had them.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what they called. They had these little. They weren't as complicated as that one. I mean, basically, they were these little heat tablets, mm-hmm. Some kind of combustible material that you would light, and then use your canteen liner over a metal cup in your canteen that you would heat the food in.
Oh, okay.
So usually we ate them cold, though. You know, we were light infantry, so we would hide and sneak around small. you know, small unit tactics and stuff. So it wasn't like we were setting up camp and starting a fire. Yeah.
Sounds like a bunch of like brownies running around.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let's hide.
Yeah, that's what we did, especially as a sniper. People.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had died. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone said the other day,
I don't know anything.
There was an incident and apparently I walked in. They said, where were you? You could have helped. And I thought, what was I going to do? Hide across the street in a building and shoot? Because that's what snipers do. Really.
On the grassy knoll.
Yeah. But the MREs would, you know, they'd come in cases. I remember, you know, back at our staging areas, they would have cases of them on pallets just piled up. And they were numbered in some manner. And that would be the menu in that box. They would be, you know, maybe 10 of each meal. And then they would filter down to us, you know, in the team or squad or team levels. And we would divide them up.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you got things you liked. Sometimes,
right.
You know, everything. You know, I remember one I really despised was scrambled eggs and ham.
Mm.
And it was basically this brick of yellow mass. I don't even know. With perfect little cubes of ham throughout it.
Right.
And
it was like
without the ability
simulated.
To warm that, it was really bad. And it was a whole barter system. I mean, guys,
sure.
Some people liked that and you would trade.
Became a commodity, right.
And, you know, I was always honest with myself. We didn't have any vehicles. We walked everywhere, you know. So I didn't want to carry extra weight, and I probably threw away half the MREs they gave me, and you know they all came individually. The package itself was self-contained, but then within that you would have each individual element of the meal. So you know maybe crackers, applesauce, peanut butter, the main meal, you know, beef stew.
Right.
They came with little bottles of Tabasco, a little package of napkins.
Right.
Cocoa powder, usually, or some kind of drink.
Oh, something hot. You could mix it. Yeah.
Right. Coffee, a little coffee, instant coffee in it. But I would separate
cigarettes.
Them all, and I'd put...
No, that was in World War II. There'd be cigarettes.
No cigarettes.
They used to give you a ration of cigarettes.
Right.
Not anymore.
No, a lot of the guys, chewing tobacco was the big deal in the light infantry because you couldn't smoke. Again, we're hiding.
Oh,
you know, so.
Right. Guess so. Yeah.
But... And then I would divide them up and put them in my assault pack. And I just remembered you were asking me if there was if I had another story. Do you have time?
Yeah, we've time.
Oh, right.
Sure.
So I'm in one of these training missions, and I had broken up my MRE and I put it all into what we called an assault pack. It was a smaller backpack, basically, on top of our bigger pack that we could take off and use separately. And I was using it. I had all my meals in there, and I was using it as a pillow one night. And I woke up in the morning, laying in the middle of the woods. And my zipper was open, and half my meals were gone.
Mm.
So I start yelling at my squad, you know, what you stole from me? We're brothers. We're supposed to work together. And they were all looking at me like I was crazy, claiming they never stole it. So I went through that whole day aggravated. I was going to ask for a transfer. How can these guys steal my food? We're in this situation.
Band of brothers
night,
and all that.
Yeah, all that. I went to bed the next night, and I put my head on my assault pack, and I was just dozing off. I heard something, and I look up, and not 3 inches from my face is a raccoon. And I physically watched him grab the zipper with his little raccoon hands,
open
the zipper, and it was almost like he was reading the MREs. He was taking them out, feeling them, and trying to smell them, and they were all, like, vacuum sealed.
Yeah.
And he ran off with, like, 3 or 4 of my meals. So.
See, I thought you were going to say he went in there, and he opened them up, and he read what was in it, and then he threw it on the ground and ran away.
No, he ran off with 3 or 4 of my packages.
You'd think a raccoon would be smarter than to eat
them. You would think.
Right. Wow.
So I had a lot of apologizing to do.
I'm sure.
But, you know, they varied. And it was chicken cacciatore, I remember, was pretty bad.
Ugh.
None of them were what you would consider good.
No, of course. It was survival food. But, like, I don't know. It seems to me like it could be done in such a better way. But what do I know? I mean, I've never had to feed, you know, however many millions of people.
I don't know.
I think I've, you know, catered for 100. That's about it. So.
Yeah, and depending on the situation, we would... You know, I would eat a package of cocoa powder
just to get some fuel into you.
Yeah, instead of eating the beef stew.
Right.
I didn't even care.
And then how did it work with people of different rank? Like, did everybody...
Yeah, well, so...
When you were out in the field?
In the field, they ate MREs
with us.
They got nothing special. You know, and I was in a small unit. I mean, the light infantry, we, you know, a small unit. So even our, you know, lieutenant, our company commanders, they were with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they had to suffer the same indignities.
Right. But when you were on the bases, I guess there are
They had separate, if I remember, there might have been an officer, chow hall.
Because, you know, on MASH, Colonel Potter ate with them.
Right.
With the guys.
Right.
And, you know, to me, MASH is real, yeah. And that was the Army.
But. No, that's funny. You know, the lower-ranking officers, you know, your platoon leader or lieutenant, first or second lieutenant, they would eat with you. The guys directly, mm-hmm. you know, in command of you, they wanted to be part of the group and bond. So they would eat. And, like, I think our chow hall at 10th Mountain was just one chow hall in our area, mm-hmm. and it was everyone ate there. But in the bars or some of the clubs, the officers had separate, you know, amenities. Mm-hmm. That day.
Okay. So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess it makes sense if you're an officer. You know.
Yeah.
I told you the story about how my father got out of serving combat in Korea,
remember.
Right?
No.
I thought I told you. So, my father got recruited. Yeah, drafted. Not recruited.
Drafted
for Korea. It was, like, right at the end. And when he went, you know, to report for duty, whatever, they looked at his resume or his credentials or whatever, and he had been a Boy Scout troop leader.
Oh, right.
He had like gone straight up through the ranks of Boy Scout to Eagle Scout, and then he'd become a troop leader. And so when they drafted him, they looked at that and they were like, oh, good, we need a scout leader on the base in New Jersey for the officer's kids, so we're going to station you as the scout troop leader and you don't have to go to Korea.
There you go.
And fight. I know.
That's
so
awesome.
The Boy Scouts could have saved his life.
See?
And he probably learned more about survival in Boy Scouts, actually.
I'm sure he did.
Fending off all the lecherous, you know, scout leaders. Because apparently now, that's going to be like the next Catholic Church scandal is the Boy Scouts, because that's all coming out now.
Well, the whole thing with the homosexuals being allowed in.
And now, but all this abuse is covered up. And anyway, that's a whole other show. That's a different story.
Yeah.
Okay, so one last question. What about the McDonald's on the base at Guantanamo?
I didn't even know that.
You didn't know that at Guantanamo?
Are the prisoners allowed to eat?
That's a good question.
They're probably smarter enough not to eat.
Probably smarter than that, yeah. Although, having been to Cuba, I can tell you the food was pretty bad. But, there's a McDonald's, or it could be a Burger King. I think it's a McDonald's on the base at Guantanamo for people.
I believe it. Yeah, of course there is.
Stationed there. Yeah. I mean, talk about... We haven't done any trade with Cuba in 60 years, but because we have Guantanamo, we can have a little franchise of McDonald's
sure.
right
That's
there.
American
like the
soil.
Ultimate capitalist symbol on American soil. It's pretty
there
messed
it is.
Up. Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't seem right without it.
So we've already gone over time, so we're going to have to stop. Any other questions, comments, things we want to talk about, military food in general? Do you feel like you were well fed, pretty well taken care of? My tax dollars went
Your
to
tax dollars
take care
did
of
right.
you. Yeah,
I'm sure we were throwing money out the window. But
yeah,
I ate all right.
Yeah,
you know,
you seem pretty well fed now. I mean, it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
It was. We just ate pizza here.
I was probably better fed then than I am now. As a
now,
chef,
it's true.
I know. Have time to eat anymore.
I know. We never get to eat. We were starving when we got here. Yeah. All right. Well, that was great. Thanks for coming on and filling us in on the food experience of foodiness in the military. And we'll be back, like I said, next week with the 1 year anniversary special. So we'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.